You're listening to The Edie J. Adler Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom, amigos. Welcome to The Edie J. Adler Show. I am Edie J. Adler. Thank you for tuning in to my very, very first episode. And I would like to dedicate this episode to my beloved parents, Eron and Neftali Ocampo, who, God willing, are watching me from heaven, and I hope to make them proud. So this show is dedicated to everybody, every topic, as long as we keep it civil. No name calling here, no insults. And also, we are very proud to be supportive of Israel and grateful to live in this beautiful United States of America, the greatest country in the world, still. So thank you for tuning in. Let's get started. And my first guest today for my very first show, I have my husband, Neil Adler, who has been a realtor for over 30 years. He's very ethical, very knowledgeable, and one of the reasons that I fell in love with him is because he's ethical. He would rather answer to a higher authority than make a commission, so you can trust him, and I do. And Debbie and David Kleinberg, dear friends who also happen to be clients of Neil's. Let me tell you a little bit about them. Dave and Debbie Kleinberg have two grown children. Dave is a program director, with developmentally disabled adults with a background in social services. Debbie has been working in special education as both an assistant and currently as a teacher. And a very good one, I may add. If I had children, I would want Debbie to be their teacher. So please welcome my guests. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hi.
So, Neil, I know what you do for a living, but why don't you describe what a good realtor is supposed to do for their clients, please?
Well, a good realtor will look out for the best interest of the clients. So we have a code of ethics that we have to, realtors have to adhere to for clients, members of the public, and fellow realtors. And I've been very active in my local association on the board of directors and our professional standards and ethics committees.
What made you decide to become a realtor?
You know, I like dealing with people, and it's very easy, and I always like to put myself in my client's position, and I always say, you know, always attack the problem but not the person. And it's a very personal business, and over the years I've handled many, many transactions. And, you know, I always remember that when somebody sells their home, it's their, somebody may have passed away or they got married or birth of a child, and I take it personally like it's my own home.
Very nice. David and Debbie, thank you for coming to my very first show. You're dear friends of ours. We've known you for what? More than 25 years,
yeah.
Yes. And when you decided to buy your first home, what were you looking for?
Well, bottom line, we were looking for something we could afford. I mean, that's really the bottom of it. But what we were looking for, you know, a place where we and our children could be happy, could be, you know, just it would be a place that we could call home and be comfortable.
Yeah, how about you, David? Same thing?
Yeah, same thing. You know, a place where, you know, we can call our own and still be, you know, in an area where, you know, we're still not far from everyone or every professional person or doctor or whatever, you know, may want, you know, and the location was important, and we just wanted a place to call our own, and that's it.
The American dream.
That's right. Yeah. It was a long time coming before we could buy our first home. So
yeah, it really was.
And with all the choices that we have, especially here in California, Friendship aside, why did you decide to go with Neil?
Well, we knew about his honesty. We knew about his commitment and his faith. And, besides the friendship, you know, where do we meet Neil? We met you at Temple.
Right.
And so, that was a big deal for us. And so while we didn't know how Neil would be as a realtor, but we did know that we were comfortable with Neil on a personal basis.
Right.
Very good. And so did he make it a little bit easier for you? Because I know from personal experience, when you're buying a home, it's frightening. And when I bought my first home before I met Neil, the realtor that I hired was supposed to be someone that I trusted. I had worked with this person at a TV station. And when she went into real estate and I wanted to buy a house, I looked for her specifically because I thought I could trust her. Come to find out that she was just looking out for that commission. Mm-hmm. First of all, I found my own home because she never took me or sent me listings or anything like that, what you're supposed to do. And then secondly, she was not looking out for my interest. I found out later when I ran into the seller's agent and we had a discussion about the deal. And it's a long time ago, but that's not your experience, right? You chose Neil because you trusted him and hopefully he didn't betray that trust.
Absolutely not.
Not at all. In fact, he lives up to it 100%.
Yeah, there are so many realtors, like you were saying, that we could have chosen. But and there's another realtor in our group.
Right.
And we just wanted somebody who, while looking out for our interests, also wouldn't, like, basically, I'm going to say, browbeat us. You know, we're there to buy a house. We have no idea, we had no idea what that really entailed and everything. I mean, you know, we knew what we wanted, but we didn't know, we didn't know all the ins and outs. And so the fact that we got somebody who, we hired somebody that was so knowledgeable and so knowledgeable about the area and about the houses themselves. You know, Neil did his homework.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So, honey, or Mr. Adler, I should say, probably.
Well, my father was Mr. Adler.
More professional. So once the Kleinbergs decided to go with you, what was your plan in order to make sure that they got something that they could afford, something they would like, and something that that met your standards, not just for a client, but for personal friends? What was your plan?
Typically what I do when I get a new client, and I wanted to express my gratitude to Dave and Debbie for their trust and confidence, and when somebody tells me they trust me, I don't know that I can get a higher compliment than when somebody tells me they trust me. That means a lot to me. And usually what I do is I kind of, quote-unquote, lack a better term, pre-qualify them. And the first thing I ask the buyers are, what kind of payment are you comfortable making? Because as far as the loan amount, we don't know what loan amount they can qualify for, but we do know when they're paying rent or whatever, when they say, okay, we're comfortable making X payment. So that this way that I know, okay, based on that, they could probably qualify for this or that or whatever. And how's your credit? Now, most people may or may not know what their credit score is, but they usually have an idea if their credit's bad, good, or excellent. And then the third question I ask them, how much cash do you have available that you feel comfortable using? So with those three pieces of information, it kind of gives me an idea which direction to go. And then after that, then I've got some lenders that I work with that I trust implicitly, and I said, I'm going to refer you to ex-lender. And what I do is I call the lender, I explain the situation. Before I turn them over to my client, okay, they can do this, this, and this. And then I follow up when the lender talks to the clients. They get the information or tax returns, they run their credit. And then once they have all that information, then we start looking. And that's why I always say, you know, attack the problem, not the person. And the most important thing is negotiating on the best half of the client. So usually when I work with buyers, I tell a buyer, when you're a buyer, you got to think like a seller. When I work with sellers, you got to think like a buyer. So you know that each, whomever's on each side of the transaction, that they feel comfortable with the process.
So once Neil referred you to the lender, how was that process for you?
Well, because it was our first time, I guess, and because it was Neil, he came along with us, and you know, while we signed all the documents and basically signed our lives away, which is certainly what it felt like. Neil came with us, and the lender, we felt that the lender would be good because Neil recommended her, and just with the idea that hand fed everything because we didn't know. So this is what you do: that you sign this, you sign this, you sign this, and this, and you're signing this because, you know, that's what this signature says, and that's what that signature says. And, you know, basically we had to be led around because we didn't know what we were doing. And, yeah, and so on.
No, I was just going to say that a part of it was with Neil's help and Linda and everything going on that we trusted the process.
That's important.
And that was really something that was a big thing for us, that we knew that we were taking the right steps and talking to the right people. And that it goes to the word, the trust again. And so that was very important.
So, Neil, do you find that most first-time home buyers go through this experience like that, not knowing what's going to happen or what is expected of them? I'm going to tell you, when I first bought my house, I was adamant that I wanted to buy a home before I was 30. Don't ask me why, but I did. So I did. And one of the things that my realtor never explained to me, and I had no clue about this, like you were talking about the money. I had the money for the down payment, but that was my money. And then I come to find out that there are closing costs. So what the heck are closing costs?
Well, there's title insurance, the mortgage, the commission for, or the payment to the lender. And usually the closing costs run about 2 to 3% of the purchase price. Now, many times what I have done, and I think it's critical in this business, communication. Keep the lines of communication with your clients and with the agent on the other end of the transaction. And I put many first-time home buyers into their first home. And the most important thing is once we establish, okay, what the buyer can qualify for, then I will email them or show them listings. And many times what I'll do is I will negotiate closing costs for the buyer. So, for example, let's say for the house, that we're looking at a $500,000 house. And typically what we'll do is we'll submit the offer requesting closing costs. So I'll come in maybe a little bit closer. So what I don't want to do is come in too high and too low. We want to be able to get the lines of communication open and negotiating. So let's say, for example, it's $500,000, and usually it's about 3% closing costs. So I'll offer maybe a little bit less than 500 with a credit for 3% of closing costs. And oftentimes what the listing agent will do will come back, they'll do a counter offer and include the closing costs in the price. So for example, let's say, all right, the seller will give you we'll give you the 3%, $515,000, but we're going to include it in the price. Now, typically, you don't finance closing costs over the course of the loan. However, basically, what you're doing is you're adjusting the price. The seller nets the 3% or $15,000, and you're amortizing the $15,000 in the price of the home. So, all right, so you raise the price by $15,000, but in the meantime, the $15,000 the buyer has in their pocket. And if you figure $15,000 divided by a 30-year mortgage, 360 payments, is what? That's an extra $70, $80 a month. But in the meantime, that's the money the buyer has in their pocket. And I would say in all the years I've been doing this, almost every time when I represented buyers, especially first-time home buyers, we're able to successfully negotiate a credit for the buyer's closing costs.
So is that what happened in your case?
I think so. I know that the buyer gave back a certain amount. So we had a set amount, and then, the buyer gave some of that back. And
you mean the seller?
That's what I meant. I meant the seller. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, the seller gave back part of what we paid. I don't remember exact numbers or anything.
But that helped.
But it did help, and it got us into our first home.
Very nice. And we've been to your home, and you turned this. I saw your place before you bought it because I wanted to see it. I normally don't go with Neil to see properties. But in this case, because you were going to buy it, I wanted to see it. So I went and I saw it, and it looked nice. But it was an empty space.
Yeah.
You've made this into a home. It's welcoming, it's warm, and whenever you've invited us, we've been honored to be with you, and we feel very comfortable in your home. It feels like a home. It doesn't feel like a house that somebody bought. It feels like a home. It's loved. Love is present in that place.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So, are there special programs for first-time home buyers or for people who may not necessarily qualify for a conventional loan?
There are, like, for example, FHA. You can get in for 3.5% down. Your credit can be average. There are a number of first-time home buyer programs. I think there was some that were out there, but the money's been grabbed up, but I think there's still a few out there. And I think the most important thing in the process is communicating. Communicate, communicate, communicate. And I always say the buyer wants to buy, the seller wants to sell. So it's just a matter of both sides communicating effectively. And, you know, it's if you do it right, almost every time I've been successful in negotiating a credit for the buyer to get closing costs. And there's always some programs out there. It's just a matter of qualifying, and sometimes the money runs out, then they reissue the program. So it's just a matter of, you know, waiting for the new programs to come out.
What happens when – I'm sorry, you wanted to
say? I was just going to say – well, I guess we'll get to it later on, but I was just going to say that when we did go out and look at houses, that Neil had done his homework, like I mentioned before, but he had exactly where we were going. He knew exactly which we would go to first. He, you know, if there was somebody that was there that day, which was pretty unusual, but, you know, if there was somebody that was there that day, you know, Neil interceded and talked to the person and, you know, it was really painless.
Good.
You know, we just like, okay, here's one. And this particular one happened to be next to, a big lot, and they had chickens. And I'm like, I really don't want to live right next door to chickens.
I would have gone up to
roosters.
The chickens.
Well, yes, but the roosters is what I was concerned about. You know,
they don't only croak at dawn, they croak all the time.
They do, and, you know, Anyway, I felt that I mean, I guess I can speak for both of us. We did feel that, you know, we were being helped by somebody who really knew what he was doing and was very comfortable with his role.
Right, exactly.
And above and beyond being our friend.
Right.
Very good. That's good to hear. So what happens when you find yourself in a multiple offer situation? Which is very common nowadays,
yes,
because there isn't enough
it is.
Inventory, as I
well,
hear.
Again, representing the buyer, it's communicating, and there's more than once when I've represented a buyer and we multiple offers and we didn't get it, but many times we did. So again, it comes down to communication. And more than once when I represented buyers, when we were in multiple offer situations, we weren't the highest offer. But fortunately, I knew the listing agent. And we got the deal because the agent knew that once we get in, we can close. And I would say in 30 years, I can count on less than one hand the time that we put something in escrow where we didn't close it.
But isn't the highest offer the best offer?
Not always.
Why is that?
Well, the highest offer could be contingent upon the buyer selling another property. Or they could be... and oftentimes, I haven't experienced this, but I've seen where a lot of times these buyers, agents will jack the price up, and once they get into escrow, then they start renegotiating and looking for a $30,000, $40,000 discount because of this not working and that not working. And I would say the best escrow is a closed escrow. But again, communication is key. And like I said, there's been more than once where I represented the buyer in a multiple offer situation. And because I knew the agent and they knew that my track record is once we get it in, we close it, I've been successful sometimes in multiple offers, but my offer was not necessarily the highest.
I've heard people say, I'm going to wait until the prices come down. What do you think about that? Are prices coming down?
No, they're not. See, you can wait and wait and wait, but in the meantime, more than likely, if you're renting, I say you're paying a mortgage. You're paying somebody else's mortgage. The upside is that, okay, you get in, there's the different programs. They have what are called 2-1 buy-downs where you qualify at the starting rate. Let's say, for example, right now it's maybe 6.5%. You have to qualify at 6%, but the first year it's 2% below, and that's like 4.5%. The second year is 1% below. It's like 5.5%. And by the third year, if rates come down, then you can refinance. But at least in the meantime, when you're making that mortgage payment, more than likely you're going to have a tax benefit for the property taxes and the mortgage interest, and you're building equity. So if you want to wait, keep on waiting because you're paying a mortgage. If you're renting, you're paying somebody else's mortgage, and you're putting equity in somebody else's pocket.
So when's the best time to buy?
I would say you buy or sell because you want to, not because you have to. And I never put a square peg into a round hole. It says you buy when you're ready and not before.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. That sounds interesting. With all the sites that we have available now on the internet, all the realtors, I'm not going to mention any because I don't do free commercials, but they're out there. Hundreds of them, it seems, and commercials, and I'll sell your house for 1%. So why would anybody want to choose a realtor like you who's not going to do it for 1%, let's say?
I would say you get what you pay for. If somebody's going to do it for only 1%, you know, they're going to cut corners. So, like I said, you get what you pay for. If you want the best, you pay for the best. I'm not saying I'm the best. I'd like to think that I'm good at what I do.
Well, I say you're the best.
Okay. But
I'm a little biased.
But, you know, it's all negotiable. And again, you get what you pay for. And, you know, I would say, and again, communication is critical. And I say that there's no dumb questions. You just got to ask questions and ask.
Okay,
ask,
but
ask.
Now let's see. I can go on the internet. One of these sites, click on it, and go directly to the house, maybe talk to the owner myself, and if I have the money, why would I need a realtor?
Because you want somebody experienced who is able to negotiate on your behalf. And that, you know, if you...
Get closer to the microphone, please.
If you do it on your own, there's a lot of things that members of the public don't know as far as home inspections, maybe something with the homeowners association. There's a lot of unknown factors. So I'd like to think that our profession helps the seller and the buyer dealing with things. And we don't give legal advice or tax advice because we're not attorneys. We're not tax professionals. But we should know the legal and tax implications of buying and selling a property and refer them to the appropriate people.
That is something. That's something that I was going to touch on, is the fact that Neil has a lot. He's been in this business. He has a lot of contacts. And if we had a question about anything, he would say, "This is who you need to talk to." And that person was also very knowledgeable and could answer our question if Neil couldn't. So Neil, like I said, with the business, as long as he's been in the business, he knows a lot of the answers. And if he doesn't know it, then he knows who to ask or who we should ask.
Yeah, it's like the old line. It's not only what you know; it's who you know.
Right, right. So when you recommend somebody, what do you look for in this person that you're referring to, a client of yours or a friend?
That they're honest and ethical, and I've had previous experience with them, and they look out for the client above their interests.
So if you wouldn't recommend just somebody who handed you a business card?
Not necessarily. Anybody that I refer, like a tax CPA or an attorney or home inspector or whatever, a lender, typically somebody that I've had experience with, and I want to make sure that they look out for the client's best interest. And if they do, then I refer them. And if I don't know them, maybe I'll try to get references, but I want to make sure whomever I represent refer to my clients, that they've got a track record, that I've used them, or I know people who have.
Very good. So I know that you've recommended Neil before. Would you recommend him again?
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. You don't even need to ask that question.
Yeah.
We have tried to refer Neil, you know, many times.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a very competitive business, and there are a lot of good realtors out there. I never meant to imply that they weren't, but there is also a lot of not-so-good agents out there who just won the commission. And so I'm glad that Neil isn't one of those people who just won the commission. We can all use the commission, by the way, but money is not everything. There are other things that are more important than money.
Absolutely.
And before I forget, I want to invite everybody, including you. My friend Lisa Gibbons is so wonderful. She has this organization called Lisa's Care Connection, where they help people suffering from Alzheimer's disease and their caregivers. All their programs are free. In fact, that's how I met Lisa, because as you know, you don't know this, but I lost my beloved parents, both of them, to this horrible disease, Alzheimer's. And I was looking for a place where I could find some support. I found Lisa's Care Connection. She has several of these locations throughout the nation. There's one in Burbank. And on September 19th, they're having senior prom. So if you never went to your prom, or if you want to relieve a prom, or if you want to send a senior citizen to prom, you can make a donation. Just look for Lisa's Care Connection, lcc.com, and you can get all the information there. I highly recommend it. If you or someone you love is suffering from Alzheimer's, this is a great resource, and it's free. Where do you find that? Unfortunately, Lisa and I share the experience of losing our beloved, beautiful mothers to this horrendous disease. I describe it, Ronald Reagan said it was a long goodbye I say it's a long, painful goodbye. It's like you get lost in the labyrinth of your own brain, and you don't know what the heck is going on. My mother became a little girl. My father wasn't as bad. So if you want to support a worthy cause, please, Lisa's Care Connection, she's the one. So anything you would like to add?
I don't know. When we get to the point where we're going to buy something else or sell our place or whatever, I don't have no idea what that reason would be right now, but we will use Neil.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. So tell me about refinancing, because we haven't touched on that.
Well, I don't typically do loans, but I do know a little bit about it. And right now the rates are, I believe, in the mid-sixes. A couple years ago, when the market was going crazy, rates were like in the twos and threes. My understanding is that the Fed may lower the rates in a month or two. Now, typically, that doesn't directly affect the interest rates, but in the long run, it does. So I would say the most important thing is see what rate you have now and if it's worth refinancing. If not, then just hold on to it and wait till the rates come down. If you can lower your payment by a certain amount, by a substantial amount, but then obviously you want to talk to a reputable lender and they will tell you to wait, or it's now time, or just follow their lead on that. And I know a few very reputable lenders who would do that, who were honest and ethical, and they would say, okay, right now is not the time. Feds are lowering rates. In the long term, maybe in a couple more months, rates may be coming down, so just keep an eye on the market.
Yeah, so that was my experience when I bought my house in Inglewood, which, by the way, is a very nice area. Don't believe the lies about Inglewood. When I bought my house in Inglewood, my first property, because I didn't know about closing costs and my agent wasn't that helpful, I had to take a second mortgage to pay for all these extra expenses and also for some repairs that the house needed. The house is so old that it's not registered in the city of Inglewood. They started registering homes in 1925, and my house is not registered.
Wow.
Wish I had kept it. But anyhow, I digress. So I had to take a second mortgage, and I wasn't comfortable with that because it was one of those that it was going to be a balloon payment at the end, and I wasn't comfortable. I didn't trust the person who loaned me the money. It was the previous owner. And rumor had it that he had done this before with other people, and then he would try to collect on the loan, and when the people couldn't pay, he would get the house back. So I wasn't comfortable with that, and that's when I did a refinance. And a friend of mine who was in real estate at the time, Eileen Landhoff, she referred me to a lender, and she helped me through the process of refinancing my home. And that's how I got rid of that ugly second mortgage. So would that be the way to go for people who don't have balloon payments, or would it be better for them to refinance and get rid of the second mortgage? What do you think?
Well, back in the late 80s, they had what was called balloon payments. And that's, they were amortized. They were five years doing one, and five doing. They would be due in 5 years. So, for example, in 1988, people would have a balloon payment that were due in 5 years. So they would make the mortgage payment, and in 5 years the balance would be due.
That was my case. Right. I bought my house in 1988.
But unfortunately, the market went south, and a lot of people who had these balloon payments were, quote-unquote, upside down. The house was worth less than the mortgage. So now they don't do balloon payments.
Oh, they don't that anymore? Good.
They don't do. Like I said, they have.
But people do have second mortgages.
Yes, yeah. But right, you can get like a homeowner's line of credit, which helps. And like I said, they do the 2-1 buy downs. You do qualify at the full rate, but the first couple of years, your payments are less.
Okay. Well, if you're ready to buy a home, you can contact Neil. If you're ready to sell a home, you can contact Neil also. I'll give you his phone number, 818-282-2516, 818-282-2516. Do you have a website?
Yes, neiladler.com, NEALADLER.com.
NEAL, not with an I.
Right.
So when you buy your home, I would strongly advise that you also get a pet. And what a better way than to rescue one. I'm going to read you a little story about this pet, this beautiful dog at the East Valley Animal Shelter in Van Nuys, California. If you think you can't find a handsome, intelligent, affectionate, and a playful companion at an animal shelter, you're mistaken. Goofy awaits a loving family to meet, adopt, foster, rescue him at the East Valley Animal Shelter in Van Nuys, California, where he entered as a stray with a possible owner who has not reclaimed him. I hate people who leave their pets, abandon them. There should be a list of people who do this to their pets, and they should never be allowed to own another pet. Judge Judy, are you listening?
It's like a no-fly list.
Right. Goofy is 2 years old, and he embodies a goofiness that is very endearing. He has done well in playgrounds, and he has shared a kennel with different dogs. He weighs an estimated 65 pounds, but don't say he's too big for your apartment or house, because your residence is likely much larger than the cement cold kennel that Goofy presently shares. So stop goofing around and head to the shelter to meet Goofy. It's the East Valley Animal Shelter, 14409 Van Owen Street, Van Nuys, California. He's adorable. I already have 3 dogs, 3 cats, 2 parrots, and a turtle. And they are all rescued, and believe me, the joy they give you is so, so wonderful and so beautiful. And I hear people say when they lose a beloved pet, I'm never going to do this again. It hurts too much. Well, let me tell you, it hurts. Sometimes it hurts more than losing people. I'm sorry to say that. Not always, but sometimes. But when you give yourself some time to grieve and then go to the shelter and adopt another cat, another dog, you are not replacing the beloved pet that you lost. You are honoring their memory by saving the life of another pet who might end up on death row. And they're all so beautiful. Our latest acquisition is a pit bull. Wonderful female pit bull. And I know what people think about pit bulls. It's not the dog. It's not the breed. It's the human behind that breed that is dangerous. So listen to me, please. I'm telling you from personal experience, you will be rewarded if you adopt a pet, a cat. And by the way, you have adopted a couple of dogs, haven't you?
We had JD, who we adopted from the East Valley Animal Shelter. It was the West Valley Animal Shelter. Yes. And we had him for a long time. And
his name was JD.
His name was JD, standing for Jewish dog. Although that's not what our kids say, but whatever.
I first saw him on the Sabbath.
Oh.
And I was there, and he licked me right through the bars.
Oh,
it was the only dog that did that. And I said, okay.
And the rest of us fell in love with him. We think he was part Corgi and part Jack Russell.
He was very cute, I remember.
He was very cute and very sweet.
Very sweet.
Now, we got it through an agency, but he's also a rescue. And his name's Kojo. And he is part pit, and he's part Chihuahua. So he's got the jaws of a pit bull, but he's got the personality of a Chihuahua.
And we hope that the mom was the pit bull, right?
Absolutely. No, yes, absolutely. The mom was the pit bull. He is the cutest dog ever, and he is so affectionate. And, you know, but he also gets pretty protective and pretty crazy.
And he gets fearful, too.
And he's also very fearful.
Yeah.
You know, if we do something out of the routine, you know, this morning, for instance, we walked out the front door to go do something, and instead of going out through the garage and getting in a car, and according to our son, he yiped for a long time because we didn't do what we normally do. It wasn't so much that we left, it was that we went out the wrong way.
Right, right.
So he didn't like it.
The thing about Kojo is that he's very friendly, not only to people, but to other dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've met Kojo. He's nice.
Yeah, he's a sweetie.
Just a really sweet dog.
He lets the entire neighborhood know that somebody new has come to the house, and then he settles down, and he's a love dog.
Yeah.
Right.
It's how you treat dogs. It's not, like I say, it's not the breed. It's not the dog. It's the people behind the breed, behind the dog. Also, I would recommend, though, if you are going to adopt a strong dog, like a German Shepherd, Pit Bull, Doberman, I would recommend that you know how to handle this breed, because they may be very friendly and they may be fearful also. And it takes a few months for them to acclimate to their new home. So their true personality doesn't come through right away. So you should know how to handle them. Never, ever, ever hit a dog or yell at them, because that's not going to work. That's just going to make them more afraid. But if you know how to handle them, if you know how to be the pack leader, and if you take them to training, which, by the way, the shelter offers for free, and you take training with a dog, then you'll end up with a beautiful addition to your family. You agree?
Yes, absolutely.
I would say they give us much more than we give them. Adopt, but don't shop.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And my dear friends, I want to share something with you if you're new to me. Some of you have already seen some of my small videos that I've produced for the last year and a half. I suffer from anxiety and panic attacks. And it's not something that you can control. It's not something people will tell you. Oh, get over it. Oh, just deal with it. No, you don't do that. You can't. Don't listen to these people. It only gives you more anxiety when you hear this. It's not a switch that you turn on and off. It's an illness. It's a mental illness. And it's not that you're crazy. It's not that you're insane or that you don't know what's going on. It's just a chemical imbalance in your brain that causes you to have anxiety. There are medications, which if your doctor recommends medication, try using it. I also do breathing exercises. You breathe in deeply. Hold it for a few seconds. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then let it out completely until you feel all the air out of your system. Do that a few times. Do meditation. People think that meditating means not thinking about anything. That's not so. Meditating is just letting your mind flow freely. Just let go. Think about a beautiful place. In my case, it would be the ocean. I love the ocean. Try to feel the breeze of the ocean. as you imagine yourself by the ocean or your favorite place, try to smell the ocean. Try to hear the waves crashing. Maybe you hear the seagulls flying. That's what meditation is. Meditation might be different for you. It's not leaving your mind blank. That's never going to work. The second you try to empty your mind, you're going to start thinking about all kinds of stuff. And that's just going to make you more anxious. Oh, my God, I have to prepare for the show. Oh, my God, I have to feed the dogs before we go. Oh, my God, there's too much traffic. What am I going to do? I'm going to be late. No. Just let go. Let go. Try to relax. If you can't handle on your own, there's nothing wrong with taking medication. There's no shame in taking medication. It may not be forever. If you need it, take it. It's like if you need blood pressure medication, you would take it. It's the same thing. So don't let people tell you that you are crazy, that you need to get over it, and that it's just in your head. It isn't. Your true friends will stand by you. I've had friends come and stay with me when I was having a panic attack. Yes, that would be Margie Morenas, by the way. Thank you, Margie. Quick hi. She did come to my aid when I couldn't be left alone because my panic attack was so horrendous. So your true friends will stand by you. They will pray for you. I know the climbers pray for me every week, as we do for them and their family. Prayer helps. God is always looking out for you, and God's not going to let you do anything or happen. He's not going to let anything happen to you. Remember, you're safe. It doesn't feel like you're safe. It feels like you want to take off and run away. But you are safe. Look around you. Who's there? Where are you? Are you home? Are you at work? Are there people with you? You're safe. Keep telling yourself that. Keep breathing. And let go and let God. So we're coming to the end of the show. Next week, we're going to have Maria Gavin, the author, talking about her book, Decluttering. That's something that we all need to do, declutter. Declutter your mind, too, by the way. If you declutter your space, you declutter your mind. It feels more comfortable. And also, Maureen, another friend, is going to be here to talk about that same thing. She and her husband own a company that do demolition. You might need demolition if you have a lot of stuff. But that's for next week. I want to thank my guests, Debbie and David Kleinberg, for being my very first guest on this podcast. Thank you, Neil, my Príncipe Azul. For those of you who don't speak Spanish, that means Prince Charming. Thank you all for watching. I hope you watch next time. I hope you like this little show, and I hope you tell a friend. Please do tell a friend so they can tune in. And one more thing. I am grateful for my friends, for my husband, my pets, my family, and I'm grateful to have this opportunity to talk to you. No matter what happens in the world, if you wake up, if you can get up and everything more or less works, well, then you're truly, truly blessed. So remember, always, always be grateful. This is EDJ Adler. I'll see you next time.
You're listening to The EDJ Adler Show, only on LA Talk Radio.